This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
This episode was recorded for my UK column show. Please keep us independent by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I've got my Fender Strat lying here behind me and my Vox AC30 tube amp. I don't know if you play music. I know you.
Ooh, nice. Nice.
You play a bit?
I don't. I have a couple guitars here, they're just stuff I acquired over the years. I play E, G, C, E, F. That's about, I don't need much more for some songs, but that's about my range.
You don't need any more, and you just have to play power chords, and that's it. Just two notes.
And get a capo. Yeah, you're good to go.
Good old punk rock style.
That's right, man. That's right.
Adam Curry, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
It's my pleasure. Now, kan ik ook Zuid-Afrikaans met je spreken?
Hey, well, that's more Dutch.
It's Dutch.
That's
more Dutch. It's Dutch. Yeah, I grew up in Amsterdam, so I speak fluent Dutch.
Really?
I do.
Okay, so if I speak Afrikaans, you'll probably understand parts of what I'm saying, because they're very similar.
Very similar, and I have several friends who are from South Africa, and so whenever they speak South Afrikaans, to me it sounds like someone who's drunk speaking Dutch.
The Dutch don't think very highly of Afrikaans. They think it's some sort of primitive backwards language.
You see, I disagree. I mean, I know a lot of Dutch people who have homes in South Africa. It was a big thing about 10 years ago. Everybody was buying homes in Cape Town and Johannesburg. And of course, you know, the political situation, the way the news portrays it, doesn't, you know, you don't have great PR for the country.
No.
I wouldn't say that the Dutch really have any problems at all. I don't think so. But
no, they just think that Afrikaans is a bit primitive. But it's funny though, because Afrikaans is a fully fledged language, but it's very young. I think it's one of the youngest languages in the world.
So, like maybe like 100 years?
No, a little bit more. I think maybe 200 to 250 years.
Okay. All right. Well, that's like American English. You know, we're only 250 years old, so we're in the same league, brother.
Do you speak English or do you speak American?
Well, I speak American. I lived in London and in Guildford in the UK for 5 years. So I did pick up a lot of, I don't use it because, you know, if it slips out there, the Brits will look at me like, you trying to do, man? Stop it already. I speak Texan. You know, I'm in Texas, so I speak Texan.
I haven't been to the States, but I'd love to go to Texas. I hear the steaks are pretty good.
We've got some pretty good steaks. Yeah, we, you know, Texas has fed the nation several times over throughout hard times. And once we get out of this, we kind of have a beef crisis going on right now. But people are starting to become aware of the beef industry and, you know, people buying stuff in the supermarkets here that says USDA and it comes from South America. And it's been, you know, there's a great cattle drive and there's all kinds of stuff that gets shot. They get shot up with on the way. So people are starting to rediscover American beef, and which is better quality and actually cheaper.
Well, I'm a gun owner, and I love the fact that Texas has so many guns. I think I heard that.
I got one right here, man. Just in case, just in case you get out of line. You know, I got my James Bond gun here.
I heard that Texas has got more guns than the entire U.S. Army.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, in general, we are a completely armed nation, which is part of our culture, part of our it's part of our constitution. And it's not really, you know, of course, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And there's, you know, there's always things that happen that, you know, shouldn't happen. But on the other hand, I'm pretty sure that if it really came down to it, the government could not control the people. I think that's no. You know, that's always the ultimate reason why we all have guns.
Yes, well, exactly. And that's precisely why governments everywhere are trying to disarm the citizens.
Of course. I mean, look at Australia. Oh, man, what happened to those people? And they gladly gave up. Oh, here's my gun. All right, we'll all give it up. And what does it stop? Does it stop machetes? Does it stop knife crime? No, of course not. You know, so, yeah, ultimately, governments do not want you to be armed. No. They don't want you to have free speech or the right to bear arms.
Where do you think we are in the world at the moment with regards to, let's say, the temperature gauge when it comes to free speech?
Oh, well, it kind of depends on where you are and how you look at it. I mean, if we're looking at online free speech or freedom of speech, because free speech is like, you know, it's like just doesn't cost anything. But the freedom to speak your mind, I would say that the European Union has really kind of covertly shut a lot of things down, and not so much that you can't go out and post something on social media, but Germany is the one that surprises me the most. I mean, you cannot be critical of politicians, and they have pretty hefty fines for violating these laws. And obviously the UK, we've seen a lot of, videos of police showing up and saying, hey, you hurt somebody's feelings, which is kind of crazy. But in that regard, I think we've fallen into a trap of thinking that platforms is the internet and that's where speech takes place. It's not. It never really has been. You know, if you don't control your own output or where you are publishing, then you're at the mercy of someone else, which is usually more commercial interest than pure political. So we've kind of lost the ability to set up your own blog or your own website or even your own podcast. You know, when we invented podcasting, the whole idea was that you could control your own destiny with your RSS feed, which you could host anywhere. And, you know, now we have a lot of hosting companies, luckily. But when people go for something like the Spotify free hosting option, well, don't be surprised when they kick you off. So I hope that out of all this, people learn to come back to having some sovereignty over where you publish and how you publish, and not getting all wrapped up in the I've got to have followers and likes, etc. You know, that's idolatry that doesn't really result in anything, because you don't even know if that's real follows and likes, and no one has any idea what's actually real on these platforms.
Podcasting has taken off though in the last few years, hasn't it?
I've heard about it. Yeah, it's quite a thing. Yeah, and I love it. I think it's a little unfortunate that now basically anybody who's talking to someone else with headphones on and microphones is a podcast, even if it's on YouTube. Dave Weiner and I worked on the original concept. And it really does come down to your RSS feed. You know, that is your freedom right there, is controlling that yourself. And if you're building up an audience.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
On Facebook or YouTube or TikTok, well, you live at the whim of those platforms, you know? So people are always saying to me, oh, why don't you stream it on X? So because I could build up 100, 1,000, 10,000 people watching it. And, you know, today Elon's like this. If he changes his mind, I could be gone tomorrow. So, podcasting is ultimate true freedom of speech because you are literally talking. The video part doesn't matter much to me, honestly. I think it makes sense in some cases, but even if you look at the numbers, people who are watching something on YouTube are probably listening to it more than watching. And you know, with some exceptions, some notable exceptions, but it's really become a new way for people to communicate ideas and thoughts, and the whole, it's so what it's turned into, just something beautiful where audiences who had been conditioned and trained to, you know, see someone interviewed for 7 minutes on the Tonight Show. You know, we got a minute to start off, tell a joke. The producer already had a pre-interview, so I'm going to lead you into this story that you're going to tell me, play the promo clip of your movie, and then we'll end it after the commercial break and goodbye. And now people are more than willing to listen to a sit-down discussion between people for 1, 2, or even 3 hours. I mean, that is so counter to everything that we have been brought up with in our media landscape. And it also shows that, you know, the difference between linear media where, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, whatever it is, they only have 24 hours a day. They have to fit everything into that 24 hours and they have to hit all the commercial breaks and the news at the top of the hour. And we can just do whatever we want for however long we want. And there's also this concept of, oh, I can stop it and I can rewind it or I can fast forward. I mean, it's how this has played out has just been beyond anything I could have ever imagined.
Well, I mean, to feed into what you're saying, you were recently on Rogan and it was over 3 hours long. I mean, that is insane if you think about broadcasting. I mean,
yeah,
no radio or TV would have ever aired something like that long.
No. And it's also, I mean, that's because Joe and I like each other and we're literally catching up. You know, we text a little bit from time to time. That's maybe it. I'll send him a link or, you know, have a comment or, you know, just small talk stuff. I think I've been on 5 or 6 times now. It's literally like, let's catch up. It's like, just see like old buddies, you know, it's like, hey, what's going on? What you thinking about? What you've been seeing, what you've been reading. And so, I think entertaining conversation, lots of people like to listen. They like to eavesdrop in on conversation. So it's not even anything remotely like mainstream does.
Mm. So do you think that podcasting has killed the radio star?
Well, that's an interesting question. In a way, radio are their own worst enemy. What radio did is, and that's purely because of the economics of it, they have given up what radio was good at, which was local, a local community. So if you're in Austin, Texas, I'm about 80 miles west of it, but if you're in Austin, Texas, where's the Austin radio station that actually has Austin issues, Austin news, Austin music? I mean, we had this big event, the Snowpocalypse, we called it, I think 4 or 5 years ago. And we were all stuck in our homes without power for, you know, 3-4 days. There was, you know, a big snowstorm in Texas, which, of course, you know, we don't have snow plows here. We got guns and we don't have anything to clean up the snow with. And I was looking around on the radio dial. And NPR, which is our national public radio, they had a national program on. No one had anyone talking anything locally except like the local top 40 station. The weather guy was actually doing reports about what was going on, was kind of taking over the program. They were completely unprepared to do anything local. And almost everywhere now, all programming is national. you're just hearing local commercials and maybe a local weather report. So radio is its own worst enemy. And what's come back now is people who are doing podcasts about communities of interest. But also now we're seeing more and more what I call hyper-local podcasting, where it's for your town or for your neighborhood in a city. And that's what's killing radio. Radio killed themselves, not any other medium, in my opinion.
I mean, that was obviously a reference to your MTV days.
My MTV background. I know.
Can you remember the very first song that you introduced?
That I introduced? You know, I can't, because my first hours on MTV was New Year's 1987. I had just moved from Europe to the States for this job. And they, you know, I was supposed to start later, but they said, you know, hey, we've got New Year's. Would you mind being on Times Square and being the voice on Times Square? I'm like, sure. You know, I'd never actually been on Times Square New Year's Eve. It was me and a million of my friends and two bodyguards. And it was, you know, freezing cold. So I honestly don't remember. Do you happen to know what it was? Because I really don't remember.
No, I genuinely don't know.
I have no idea. It was in the days of Def Leppard and Warrant and Poison. So it might have been one of those.
That was when music was still good.
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, music is music and it comes and goes. But the formulaic stuff, you know, it's like now we have AI music, which is, I'm kind of on the fence about, because sometimes I get fooled and I'm like, oh, that was good. I'm like, oh, that was AI. I should hate that. I'm not supposed to like that. Music transforms, man. I mean, and there's always a counter movement in music. So we had, you know, we had disco, and disco, the music industry loved disco because it was, you know, bells and claps, you know, you could program it. We had drum machines and all that stuff was starting to come in. And what came out of that was punk rock. You know, that was the obvious, the obvious counter move. And that was like distortion and loud. And it was, and people are fickle, you know, so that just moved everything. And then after that, we kind of got into big rock ballads. And then from that, we got more into hair bands. And out of that came hip hop, you know, so, and then grunge. So it moves all over the place all the time.
Grunge was basically only two bands.
Well, Nirvana and Nirvana.
And Pearl Jam.
Yeah, Pearl Jam. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but still, it was a vibe, you know. It was a moment, and that's funny. It really was only two bands, wasn't it? I think I can name another one. Yeah. Well, it didn't last that long either, so.
No. Going back to MTV, I decided I want to see if I can catch you out.
Oh, boy.
Do you know what the very first video ever on MTV was?
Of course. Buggles, Video Killed the Radio Star.
Ah, you know. Okay. Now, of course, what about MTV course. Europe?
Oh, MTV Europe. Was it the Final Countdown by the band Europe?
No.
Just guessing. No. I have no idea.
Oh, that's a good guess, but no.
It's not bad. Yeah. Yeah. What was it?
So a Dire Straits, Money for Nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, seminal, of course.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Of course, yeah. The money for nothing and your chicks for free. Play your guitar on your MTV. Yeah, that makes sense. They did that.
You know, I think it's the second verse of that song that's now censored on Apple Music.
Yeah,
and
that little Spotify, little faggot is a millionaire. Yeah. Oh boy, yes. How words hurt so much, don't they?
But I mean, if you watch that video, that animation, I guess it was pivotal at the time, but it's pretty terrible now.
Yeah, I actually got an email from one of the people who worked on that video, and it was at the time they were rigging up some incredible stuff just to make that happen. But I saw all these technological innovations when I first started our video even before MTV. I started television in Europe, and our videotape was this wide. And it was reel to reel. You'd have to, put it onto. I've always been on the technical side too. You'd have to kick the machine to make sure it got into sync, and so the video mixers, they were all analog video mixers. And the big thing that came in around 85 was Quantel, Quantel, and that was a digital effects. And so, once everybody had like these starbursts happening, all these transitions that were, it was mind blowing. Oh man, look at what we can do. So if you just look at, to me, I'm 61 years old. It is amazing that we can FaceTime with each other. I mean, what we're doing right now, we could only dream of that happening when the internet first started and we were all kind of all in on it. And, the first web browsers came out. This has gone so fast. And the fact that we can now do a full on video production with relatively inexpensive tools, it's just crazy. What will we see next?
You mentioned the video effects. I was thinking now to that, the Jackson 5, Can You Feel It? I think that was even earlier. And it
That was analog. That was feedback, camera feedbacks, and was like kind of like that wave echo effect. Oh, yeah. I would say there's a couple of videos. Crazy. Do you remember Godly and Cream?
Yes.
Remember them? The Cry video? So
I don't remember the video.
Well, we had morphing technology all of a sudden. We had morphing, and Michael Jackson used it in Black or White. And that was kind of a step forward.
Yeah, with the hair.
With the hair changing and the faces changing. So that was very early digital effects was called morphing. And of course,
that's still
everybody
pretty good today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, today with AI, I mean, it's crazy. You may have eight fingers, but it's pretty good.
No. What I'm saying is that video is still pretty good. If you watch
it now,
good. You don't.
Oh, it's still good. Yeah. But even if you go back and look at Cry from Godly and Cream, they did that analog. So they went from face to face just by selecting the right people and having them in the right position. And it's really beautiful. All analog, no digital effects involved. It's just fantastic.
But I'm disappointed now with your answer about music, because I think that a lot of sort of post 2000 music really went downhill. But I think everybody says that as they get older.
I think you're right. I really, after I left MTV, I was also doing a lot of top 40 radio. I completely left. I was listening to classical music. I got into country music for a while, which I was really kind of digging. And lately I've kind of, I got saved 3 years ago and I've really gotten into contemporary Christian music, which is kind of more like country rock these days. And there's still some actual musicianship going on. Even now we're seeing things change. I hear AI everywhere. And also just live music. I still love going to a concert, even though everyone's using multi-tracks these days. Like I can hear another guitar that I don't see on stage. But still, live music, it's just nothing beats it, just with an audience and a band or a performer, the sound stack. I mean, that's just that you can't beat that. I don't care what's happening to commercial or recorded music. Someone just singing in a bar, singing in the airport. I love that.
When South Africa exited apartheid, which was 1994, for those who don't know,
ain't gonna play Sun City. wasn't that the song? Yeah,
well,
I remember.
There were a lot of bands that boycotted that whole event, and that's fine. No, that, but, mm-hmm. but post 94, the very first international act that I saw live was Lenny Kravitz. And it was pretty amazing because that, I mean, he's actually a very good musician.
A great performer too. He puts on a great show. Very, very, yeah. Very good show. Yeah. Awesome.
But now I was going to ask you now about going back to the MTV stuff, because I would not watch MTV now. I think the last that I actually enjoyed MTV was in the era of Jackass. And then after that, it just kind of went downhill.
Well, MTV had to make some decisions. And by the way, whenever I see somebody, you know, MTV is now 35 years ago for me. And someone will figure out who I am, and you know, they can have a suit and tie on, their CEO, and all of a sudden, like, wait, man, you did Headbangers Ball? And then the jacket goes off, the shirt opens, Metallica t-shirt underneath. You know, this happens all the time. It was more of a moment in time that we share collectively amongst a certain age group. And what MTV did is, you know, they bought up as many music video channels as they could. They had Black Entertainment Television. Of course, VH1 was theirs. Country music television all became part of Viacom, and it was commoditized, and the internet was coming. And so they knew that music videos wouldn't be special somewhere where you go to listen to it. And so they diversified, and that was really a ratings issue. Once they realized that the real world and remote control and Jackass, and now of course, you know, Pregnant and 16, whatever it is, that was always going to get more ratings than the music video. So they made a good business decision, but kind of killed the whole concept. And they literally just turned off all, they had like 8 different streams running, which were on TV stations everywhere and on satellite, with the classic MTV, you know, the MTV rock, MTV hip hop. They turned it all off for one reason. No one was watching it.
But for me, I mean, the voice of a generation was still the late 90s, early 2000s. What decade stands out for you?
Well, I kind of came in the middle between the 80s and the 90s. So I would say for me, it was more the 80s. So I really started my career in 81 in Europe and finished around 93 in the US. And that was also the decade of the big mobile phone, you know, the one that looked like a VHS cassette. It was the era, the early computers, the Tandy color computer, all this stuff.
And the
was CDs. Oh my God. I remember playing the first CD on the Dutch national broadcaster. It was Dire Straits, because, you know, it was all Philips. So Philips owned the CD technology, and they were on Phonogram Records, which was owned by Philips at the time. And I remember, and so we had, you know, this is like big government transmitters throughout the whole country, and we're kind of like these bandits who are, yeah, we're going to play this on our show. We had a Friday night show, and we put the CD in, and it had so much dynamics that the actual transmitter shut down. They couldn't handle the dynamics that were coming through the line. It was amazing at the time. Like, wow, can you, and you know, the CD players were this big, you know, huge, huge monsters of machines. Yeah. And then of course, strangely enough, Napster came along. We all like went like, well, MP3, yeah, it sounds like crap, but at least I can get the songs. And we have degraded our experience to an incredible degree with, you know, with literally MP3 songs. I mean, yeah, there's some higher quality ones, but in general, even the stuff you get off of Apple and Spotify, it's not as good as quality as CD was, or probably could ever be, unless you make these huge file sizes. We've really accepted a lot of degradation in the quality of what we're listening to.
Well, I've got a vinyl player here with loads of records, and I enjoy that
will
sound.
Still sound good. What's your amp? What do you have running as an amp?
Oh, no. I've got a very Mickey Mouse setup. No. Yeah. But I still play vinyls, but I actually need to upgrade.
Yeah. It's a little better if you run it to an old school amp. For sure.
But there is that scratchiness that's still pretty fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I still have one set of vinyls that I carry around. That's all my Prince records. I have every Prince album on vinyl. And I've just, wherever I've moved, I've taken those with me.
Prince is one of those musicians for me who was ahead of his time.
Well, he set the tone in many ways. Because he was virtuoso in playing every single instrument and had his own studio, and eventually, you know, for, gosh, there must have been a good 8 years where he didn't even record anything because he had the dispute with Warner Brothers. He says, I'm not going to be a slave. And we had slave on his on the side of his face. And during that time, he just did so much, created so much, such an incredible body of work. I think they'll still, if they want to, they could release a Prince album every single year. So he was just a gift from heaven, man. That guy, he had something very special.
But John Lydon was a decade ahead of him in terms of going against the labels. Who did he go? He had issues with EMI, I think it was.
I think so. Yeah. Well, he was definitely a counterculture guy. Came out of a counterculture nest, that's for sure.
He's still going strong today.
Oh, yeah. Although he switches back and forth on his positions politically, I've noticed. But, I mean, come on. When some of that stuff came out with the pistols, man.
He voted Trump. Like,
that's what I'm saying. He's been all over the place. We have to appreciate and cherish people like him.
For sure. I mean, I think Public Image Limited was incredible.
Mm-hmm. And even the packaging. Did you get the metal case? Pill. Oh man, that was so beautiful. I lost that one, of course, years ago, two divorces ago. I don't know where it went, but I had all of that promotional stuff. The pill box was great.
You said earlier you became a Christian, 3 years ago, more or less?
Yes.
So that's during the COVID era.
Little later than COVID.
Knowing what you know now, where are we, 2025? Would you go back to 2019?
Okay. I think, look, everything happens for a reason, and everything that is you think is new has already come before. The world has gone through these types of events. In general, I think everybody has some form of trauma right now, COVID trauma, whether it's in your family, whether it's with your work, with your friends. I would say that what it resulted in generally is a distrust of government. A lot of people went, wow, wait a minute, I can't trust my government. That's shocking. And the media, which is good because, you know, I've been doing the No Agenda show for over 18 years. I've been saying this, like, I come from there. You can't trust that it's dishonest, and here's why. And it's not necessarily, you know, an evil guy behind the curtain. It's a milieu. It's just how things work in organizations. But I think it has also made people search for deeper meaning. And now that you pose it that way, I think God had a plan for me. It certainly helped me move on the path that was already laid out before me. And I can see now with younger people who really, you know, when I was growing up, we had Vietnam, and then we had 9/11, and we had the Iraq War and Afghanistan. And a lot of young people today in their early 20s, they had COVID. That was their Vietnam, or that was their 9/11. And because of it, they're searching for deeper meaning. And a lot of them are picking up the Bible and saying, okay, let me try this book. Let me see how this works out for me. So I think that in general has been good. And, you know, I think that it's good. It's good that we went through that. And it's good that we're all questioning. It's good that it's really turning a lot of corners on a lot of things. And I believe that's a healthy thing. There's a lot of people who approach it with an unhealthy attitude, but in general, I think it's good that we question government, question messaging, question media, question each other, question motives. I don't think that's a bad thing. Is it, Is it fun? Is it more painful? Well, it's definitely more painful for certainly for a lot of people. But hard times makes hard men. And we had a lot of easy times, and it made, quote, it's, you know, it's the saying, make weak men. And everybody got weak and kind of passive. And now we went through something hard, and that'll change us. That'll create, I believe, a new generation of people who want to build things, create new communities, or strengthen old ones, like our own country, like the United States. I have a feeling that we can actually come out of this stronger.
Are you implying that the U.S. is in a weak position?
Oh, I think we got very weak. Oh, absolutely. And just look at what happened with President Trump. I mean, for to look at that path of 2015 and, you know, starting in 2016, then 4 years in between, and then coming back and getting elected again, man, that's something. There's something going on with that. That's not just something to scoff at. And I tell everybody, whatever you think of Trump, pay attention. You will never see another president like this in your lifetime. You will never see anyone who does the things that he's doing and does it with a very classic boomer American attitude, which is also filled with humor. You've got, if you don't allow the humor to touch you, I think you're really missing a big part of the experience. And this is something we'll be telling our grandkids about. Ah, I remember we had this President Trump. You have no idea. This guy was hilarious. Or he was, you know, bowls, or he.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
It was, you know, sometimes very mean, or, you know, all these things. You're never going to see a president like that.
Well, as somebody who's in a country that's sometimes on the wrong end of Trump's
Trump.
But I will say that I particularly enjoy the way he derails the media. It has always been, for me, one of his best points. I remember I think it was in 2019, I think it was, I interviewed Victor Davis Hanson. He had just published a book. I think it was called The Case for Trump. And he made the point that in that first election, everybody thought that he was a joke. And I remember, I think it was CNN that said that Clinton would win by something like 98 or 99% landslide.
Up until the evening of the election, they were saying that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And he had defeated every nomination within his own party also. And he used no funding of the party. He used his own funding.
His own money, yeah. Yeah, it was quite the, but that's also, I mean, people have been telling Donald Trump to run for president for 40 years, and it's not just people on the street. It was Oprah and Barbara Walters and David Letterman and all the people who now hate Trump, all the anti-Trumpers. They were always telling him, you'd be great as president. But I think in general, so, you know, media and politics and Hollywood politics is basically Hollywood for ugly people. That got so intertwined, and particularly with big globalist organizations like the United Nations and NATO and World Health Organization, you name it, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the overreach of even Murdoch, you know, Murdoch, everybody has political agendas that is mixed up with entertainment, is mixed up with the movie industry, is mixed up with advertising. It just got so convoluted. And when he came in, he's like, I have no other agenda than to make America great again. And here's what I think that means. And So right now, you know, if you believe the podcast wars, which is just, it's like, this is crazy. This is like CB radio, the old days. People are just yelling at each other and, you know, clashing over each other's signal and going on each other's podcasts and talking about that guy, and that guy talks about him and her and all this stuff. You get the idea that the whole country is falling apart, but 90% of the country just gets up in the morning, wants to go to work, you know, play. It's like the guys from the Dire Straits song, you know, I'm just moving my refrigerators and these color TVs, and I just want to get home and I just want to have a good life for my family and for my kids. And I believe he's actually working on a lot of that and changing that and bringing production back to America, because that's where we were weak. We become a, you know, a service country. Like, I'm washing your car, you're cooking for her. You know, we're all doing some kind, performing some kind of service, but weren't really producing anything. And as he said recently in the strategic defense document, he says the makers have the future. And yeah, we've got to get back to making stuff. So he's making it possible. Only the American people can do it. No one, you can lead the horse to water. So I think he's doing that, and hopefully we'll see some innovation, ingenuity, and good output.
With regards to your comment now about the perception of America falling apart, if you follow the podcast wars, similarly, South Africa is also not a war zone. You know, you would think that
Of course. My neighbor here is Laura Logan. You know Laura Logan, who did CBS News. Right. So she literally lives 200 yards down the road. And so I'm always throwing my Dutch at her, and she's pretending like she understands me and speaks back in South Afrikaans. And I pretend I understand her, and people around us go, wow. And we're like, we had no idea what we're saying. But I mean, obviously, but that's the same everywhere. That's why I take it with a grain of salt. Like, everyone's getting arrested in the UK. Well, it's not quite, it's bad, but it's not quite as bad as it seems.
Yeah, exactly.
But even the podcast wars, no one's really listening to every single podcast. You're seeing a clip here, a clip there. Oh, I can't believe he said that. It's the context may not be there. So I know this because I come from this world and I understand how it works. And the algorithms have gotten very, very good, particularly American social media algorithms, where our culture is the opposite of China. So if you're on TikTok and you like Trump, you're going to get a whole bunch of Trump videos. If you like Kamala Harris, or you like, you know, whatever it is, you're going to get all of that. Everywhere else you get, especially in the comment feeds, that's where the algorithms are really important. I hate him. I love him. I hate him. I love him. I hate him. I love him. That's intentional. That is to keep you engaged and like, oh, I can't believe that guy said that. Oh, and back and forth and back and forth. That is all brain programming. And, you know, the sooner people wake up and realize that you're really being played, and it's just, our politicians do the same thing. Blue bad, red bad, you know, right, left, all the, it's the same thing. The Democrats, the Republicans. It's a game. It's a game we play, and it's getting pretty old, but it is, that's what makes it look like everything, the whole world is on fire. And it's really not. It's Candace Owens with her little show, and Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson and Tim Pool. And now Piers Morgan steps in, and then Megyn Kelly will say something. Yeah, Ben Shapiro. So everyone, and ultimately it's all egotistical. Everybody wants to have their say. And of course, with that comes a huge degree of what I call audience capture, where if you're not saying this about this situation or this person or that country or this policy, then people say, well, I'm going to not watch you. You suck. You're no good. I'm unsubscribing. And you got to have a tough stomach to say, no, here's what I believe in. And I don't think any of those people really have that kind of stomach. They're just doing, you know, just going with the flow. They're actually more afraid of their audience than anything else.
But I think it's also because a lot of people are scared of being canceled.
Well, does that even happen anymore? I mean, so, you know, the whole idea of being canceled, again, I come back to podcasting. You can't cancel a podcast. You can't cancel me from publishing my podcast because I don't rely on any of the big platforms. In fact, over 5 years ago, so during COVID, Apple decided, this is just before the first time I went on Rogan, Apple decided, we're going to take Alex Jones and a couple other podcasts out of Apple Podcasts.
And I remember because, that.
Yeah, and because...
It was because of Neil Young, wasn't it?
I don't even know what it was. The point is, it didn't make any sense. All of a sudden, Apple's the boss of podcasting? No. So because all the independent apps were all using their database, my friend Dave Jones and I, we set up podcastindex.org, which we run purely on donations. We don't make any money off of it. And now over 70 apps and services are using that to get all their podcast information because we could no longer count on Apple. So now we're this, and we also publish the database and there's 1,000 copies of it everywhere. So no one can deplatform you off of podcasting. But if you see, oh, I'm getting traction on YouTube and boy, look at how popular I am. Be careful because now you're in the algo hamster wheel. And if you don't keep feeding the machine, if you don't keep posting content, if you don't keep the comments going, then you get downranked. You're not showing up anymore. With podcasting, it's like people follow you and they subscribe to your podcast and that's it. And you're not even really going to be discovered unless someone else says, hey, listen to that podcast. So canceling is like, well, if you rely on someone else's car, if their car decides they don't want you to drive along with them, then, you know, tough luck. Build your own car. So that's what podcasting was always intended to be.
I added my podcast to 2.0 some time ago just for safety. Good.
Yeah, of course. Safety. But it'll be somewhere in the future, we'll all be happy that that's there.
Because, I mean, you're right. Apple could take down any podcast at any time. Spotify has taken mine down 3 times.
Oh, I can't even get our podcast on it. They won't accept it. And it's just like, okay, whatever. That's fine. The podcastapps.com. Here's 20 apps that do have it and probably have more features and work better.
But at what stage did ideology take control of these companies? I mean, this is not a business move. This is an ideological move.
I think once in the United States, it was a multi-prong, but it really comes down to Section 230 of the Communications and Decency Act. And that was put in place during the Clinton administration to allow services on the internet to grow. And in short, what Section 230 does is it says, if you're hosting a blog, a podcast, or comments or posts from individuals, you as a platform are not liable if someone says something, libel somebody, lies, threatens, whatever it is, you are not liable as a platform. So whatever you say on Facebook, on Instagram, on X, even what Google indexes, they're not responsible from a legal perspective. This has been a very powerful tool, especially during COVID. And so there's ample evidence that the even parts of the Trump administration, the so-called deep state, but certainly during the Biden administration, they were telling companies like, hey, if you let these anti-vaxxers post this, we are going to reconsider Section 230. So that's really where the ideology, there's only one ideology, bottom line in America, and that ideology is green dollars. It's money. The business of America is business. That's what it's always been. And so you'll see Silicon Valley people who were vehemently Obama, love him, he's the guy, we love him, flipped to Trump within 3 months. And they flipped again when it was, whoever's in charge, as long as we can get favorable tax status, you know, there's certain types of amortization, depreciation, local tax benefits, then there's no ideology. There is really no political ideology in that regard when it comes to technology companies.
I remember that whole thing with Zuck and how he switched. And now Facebook has opened up.
Overnight. Overnight. It's amazing. I mean, we literally had a social network deplatform the president of the United States. I mean, because they knew what was coming. They knew what was coming next. And they wanted to curry favor. Yeah. But Facebook also deplatformed Trump. And they made their political choices based upon, it was business decisions. Now, underneath that, of course, you get a whole, just like in the U.S. government, you get a whole infrastructure of people who are like, Trump is Hitler. Trump is Hitler. And, you know, that just feeds on itself. That's the same thing when Charlie Kirk was murdered. I truly believe that people. What are you laughing about?
I just thought of something.
Okay. So when Charlie Kirk got murdered, you could say it in a minute. What I truly believe that people were happy that that happened because they had been told inside their social groups, whether at work, family, school, whatever, that he was a hateful, racist person. Without having ever seen anything he really stood for. Now, what were you laughing about? I really want to know what you were thinking about.
Well, you said when he was murdered and then there were some very ominous winks.
Who knows what really happened there?
Look, I was in China when that whole thing happened and I just thought, nah, this whole thing is weird. That doesn't make sense. I've not commented on it at all.
You know, we won't know until pre-trial and trial. You know, that we have a process in America, and there's gag orders, and you can't contaminate the witness pool, the jury pool. So everyone's kind of coasting on very, very little information and a lot of video.
Look, Adam, I don't know about you, but I go hunting, and I own a 308. I can tell you right now, there's always an exit wound.
I mean, obviously, I this is only the preliminary report. If it was a 30-06 and it was full charge, because you do have different types of charges,
But I mean, the 30-06 and the 308 are the same thing, effectively.
Yes.
These are pretty fast calibers.
I'm in agreement with you. But I will wait. I mean, I waited with 9/11 until I got information from pilots for 9/11truth.com. I'm a pilot, helicopter, and fixed wing. And then I really had some information I could work with. I said, whatever happened, these planes did not fly like that. So, you know, there's a lot of different things. And, you know, and I know that Building 7 didn't fall down out of sympathy for Buildings 1 and 2. You know, that's just not how it works.
It was an office fire. These things happen all the time, Adam.
All the time. So, so that is literally part of the problem, is that governments have lied to us for so long and the media has been so incredibly complicit. That what is happening now is healthy. It's healthy for us to be running around and yapping and giving our opinions. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Does it get us to the absolute truth? Probably not. But at least we're more aware and not so gullible.
I agree with you. You're preaching to the converted. I'm a big fan of not believing the government. I think it's Curtis Yarvin who... He created that, is it analogy or metaphor? I forget now which it is, but he said it's the cathedral, which is effectively government plus media plus academia. And they form the cathedral. And of course, if you go against that, you're an apostate.
And you get kicked out, of course.
Guilty.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this... is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping.
You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
It's charged.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when President Eisenhower gave his famous goodbye speech and he said, you know, beware of the military-industrial complex, that actually the original text of his speech was beware of the military-industrial-academic complex. He put academia in there as well. Yeah, not a lot of people know that. And when I look at COVID, and particularly the mRNA gene therapy stuff that came out of this, this was all academia. Academia seeing a chance. I still don't, you can't convince me that this was some grand plan by some group scheming behind the curtain. It was the perfect confluence of evil overtaking people, but not all in one go. Individually, they all had their own little agendas, and it just brought it all together and culminated in this just crazy time.
I mean, I asked you at the beginning of the conversation if you'd go back to 2019, and I wouldn't, because my son was born last year. And and he's not vaccinated, and I'm very thankful for the COVID era. Amen. Because it made me re-question what I thought I knew about vaccines, childhood vaccines. So I mean, this has now changed the entire future of my child.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that in 2012, there was and we covered this on the No Agenda show. In 2012, there was a big, I think it was like Goldman Sachs or one of these banks. And they had a big conference, and it was all the vaccine manufacturers. And because of the internet, I was downloading their PowerPoints and looking at their presentations. It was insane. It was like, we're going to have vaccines against smoking. We're going to have vaccines against cocaine abuse, vaccines for gambling. I mean, all this, like, that's not exactly how a vaccine works. You know, a vaccine is you condition the body to a certain hostile entity. And then when it hits you again, then you'll have immunity against it. All of that they were already all jacked about that stuff. A good, 16 years before COVID, they were already thinking about this stuff. The travesty mainly coming from the United States is in 1986. They basically said vaccines are so important. They are, same thing with social media companies. They are immune from liability. Well, so now we have Bobby Kennedy Jr. coming in and saying, hey, man, if they're all so safe and effective, then why wouldn't you just allow people to sue you if your product is no good? Well, obviously, then they don't want that. And so every hit to the vaccine complex in my idea is good, because it just doesn't make sense to have 72 childhood vaccines on the schedule. I mean, it's obvious, but, you know, it's all about information, and, you know, it's still being played. Look who funds our media here. It's drug companies. That's another thing. I don't know. You probably don't have drug advertising on television in South Africa. Do
not
you?
Not really. No.
No.
No. Not really. No. Well, so, I don't know. I don't really watch TV.
Right. Well, I think it's only New Zealand and America that allow that. They should stop that. That should just not be allowed. You know. And you know, you still should talk to your doctor or whatever you want to do. It's just so. I mean, we have some of the best doctors and healthcare systems in America, but the insurance companies have ruined the whole thing. They've ruined it. So no one can say we can't afford healthcare. No one actually can't afford the insurance. That's the problem. you can go directly to a doctor and say, hey, whatever you're going to charge the insurance, I'll give you 20 cents on the dollar. And they'll say, yes, please, because they don't want to deal with the hassle anyway, you know, with all the paperwork and all the, and they have to go fight the insurance company. The insurance company is just another word for bank. Mm. So we have a lot of systems that need to be unwound. And some of it's happening. It's happening right before our very eyes. It's really beautiful to watch.
But Adam, you know, for thousands of years, no kids made it past age four. This is why vaccines are so important.
Stop with this anti-vax talk, man. What are you? What's wrong with you? Science is in. Science, brother, like global warming. I'm sorry, climate change. It's science.
Global
shut
cooling.
Up,
global,
slave.
Global boiling. That's the one now.
Global heat, global heating. I've heard that. Global boiling. Yeah, that's Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations. He's like, the earth is boiling. All right. Okay. All right, brother. I'm shivering in Texas. I don't know what's happening. What's happening in your part of the world? You know, and that's another academic complex. You know, it's huge business.
Well, it's mostly based on modeling anyway. I mean, so.
It's all modeling,
I don't know if you've heard this one, but the difference between a Jehovah's Witness and a climate scientist is that one of them has had every single doomsday prediction wrong, and the other is a Jehovah's Witness.
This is a good joke. I need to use that in church.
Have you seen those lists?
I used to love the Jehovah's Witnesses. They would come to the house in Austin and they knock on the door and say, hey, come on in, man. Let me show you some of my 9/11 stuff. And they would be like, this guy's nuts. I got to get out of here.
I dated a Jehovah's Witness many years ago for a couple of years, and I went along to all the meetings and all that. It was actually very interesting.
I bet it I bet it was. Yeah.
I mean, they were very good people, regardless of what, but very boring people. Yes, they celebrated nothing.
Nothing to be happy about, everybody.
No.
That's funny.
Adam, we are coming in for a landing, and I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you. Just very quickly, what's in your playlist when you're driving in your car?
Well, I actually run a hyperlocal radio station here in Fredericksburg, Texas. We have about 12,000 people that live here. Over 10% of them go to our church. And on the weekend, you know, we get hundreds of thousands of people because we have all these wineries here. So on my playlist, I don't really have a playlist because I've always listened to the radio station that I'm on. So it's called Hello Fred for Fredericksburg. And we've got Jelly Roll and Brandon Lake and Phil Wickham and Crowder and Striper, you know, a lot of kind of contemporary Christian rock Striper. Songs. Oh, yeah, Striper. Oh, they're a Christian band. And they just did a Christmas song.
I haven't heard of that name since like 1989.
I know, they're back. And they're coming, they're doing a big reunion tour. There's still video of me interviewing Striper on the Headbangers Ball.
No, you got to send me that link.
Yes. It's on YouTube. I'll find it. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and at the time, I remember, because of course I wasn't a Christian then, I remember my producer saying, well, you know, they've got a hit song, but, you know, they're a Christian band. I'm like, okay, whatever. But they throw Bibles in the audience. I'm like, that's pretty rad. You know, I really didn't care one way or the other. And now, you know, they're doing a documentary about the history of Striper. And they just put out this really, I think it's Silent Night. They did a Striper version. It's hardcore. It's like, whoa, okay. It's good. They're good guys. I like them.
How old are they? They must be old now.
Well, if you consider me to be old, Germ, I'm, you know, 60s. Thanks a lot. Burn. All right, nice. 61, oh, man. And just rub it in.
Just hang on a sec. Yeah, as we come in for a landing here.
Ah, there it is. Flaps down, gear down. We're coming in. There's the MAGA hat. Very nice. I don't actually have a MAGA hat.
So this one is actually made in the US. It's not made in China, just so you know.
Nice. It's a good, well, that's a rare one, actually, to have it made in the US, not in China.
Also because there was a, I think Trump said he wasn't going to export the cap. So I had to have it sent to me from a friend.
Yeah, through illegal channels, it's harder to get one of those Made in America caps than drugs. I gotcha.
Adam, for the very small group of people that don't follow you, how can they follow you? Sorry for asking. So
it's okay. The No Agenda podcast. And I guess I don't really post on X, but at Adam Curry. Or if you want to email me, adam@curry.com. You know, I got that email address. I got that web domain a long time ago. So you can always hit me up there if you want to.
I actually killed my Twitter X account a week ago and my Facebook account. I found it just too toxic.
Yeah. Oh no. As I said, I don't have Facebook. I killed that eight years ago. I have an Instagram account only to check on my daughter, see if she's still alive, because she's on Instagram, and X is really just to announce when we release a new show. That's really it. And people kind of use it as an inbox. They'll tag me in certain stories. So I probably have, you know, 20 or 30 things a day. I just look at the notifications tab, but I don't have enough time in my life to scroll through the infinite scroll and see everything happening, unless I'm specifically looking for something like, okay, what's going on with the podcast wars? Let me see. Yeah, I like staying up to date with that, but that's just more my job than you know, just scrolling around.
Just quickly, I love the fact that every thumbnail of the No Agenda show is different.
It's different, yeah. So you know, so our podcast is we from the very beginning we decided we'd never have ads because with John C. Dvorak and I. We knew that, you know, whatever we were going to discuss, it wouldn't be advertising friendly. That's just part of it. We actually did not want to have any meetings with advertisers. We had that for most of our professional lives. Like, we're not interested in that. And as it became more and more work, we said, you know, hey, you guys you've got to start supporting us. And we started with the, you know, subscribe for $5 a month or whatever it was. And with the typical results, it just, you know, you can't live off $150 a month. And then we said, you know what? Let's do this value for value. Whatever value you get out of our show, send it to us. Put that into numbers and send it back. And we got still a lot of people with $5, quite a few with 50, a couple 500s and one 5,000. And we never looked back. Like, okay, turns out I can't determine what value is. I don't know what someone's pocketbook looks like. So that's been going well for us for 18 years. But as a part of that, not everybody can support us financially. We say, support us with time, talent, or treasure. And one of the things that we asked early on, and someone set up a website, noagendaartgenerator.com, is make art for every single episode, because we want to have different art every single time. And so now, of course, with AI slop models, there's at least 50 different things to choose from. But every show, right when we're done, there have been people listening live, because when we record, we also stream it live. And they've been listening, and they'll create a piece of art. And we choose one, and it's been just a thrill to have all these different pieces of art. It's an important part of our product, I feel.
I follow you on Apple, so just so you know, Apple Podcasts has the No Agenda show.
Still does. Well, people, you know, so early on in 2005, I got a call from Steve Jobs. And he said, do you have time for a meeting? Yeah, you can still see it on, well, not the meeting, but he said, do you have time for a meeting? I'm like, yeah, I can meet with you, Steve Jobs. Heck yeah. And we met privately, spoke for about an hour. He was really interested in podcasting, how it all worked. And at the end, I was kind of like, why does he want me here? He says, is it okay if I put podcasting into iTunes and onto the iPod officially? I'm like, yeah. Absolutely. And 2 days later, he announced it. It's kind of a funny video. You can find it on YouTube where he plays a piece of my podcast. I'm actually ragging on my MacBook. That's a piece of crap. He's a showman. He knew exactly what he was doing. So, and I still know lots of people at Apple and they're really nice. And they are actually, they have integrated more of the new features that we've developed than any other big app. So I have a lot of hope in what they're doing. And it's not a real revenue center for Apple. So I'm grateful that, they still have a podcast app, unlike Google, who just like gave it up and said, go to YouTube. They actually had a podcast app and they just shut it down, like so many things with Google. So I don't expect we'll ever get kicked off of Apple, but if we do, it's okay. We still have the index and it can be found on hundreds of other apps.
Did you coin the term podcast?
I did not. No. So Dave Weiner and I worked on the technology and I started doing a daily show called The Daily Source Code because I needed developers to come in and start developing applications that could, do this, that could actually help you subscribe to a podcast and get them on your mobile device. And although Ben Hammersley takes credit, the way I remember it is a guy named Danny Gregoire. He popped into the conversation at one point and said, hey, how about we call this podcasting? And we were like, yeah, that's pretty good. It makes sense. Broadcasting, iPod, podcasting. So no, we did not come up with it. And I believe Danny was the one who really came up with it.
Well, that's a great way to end the conversation. Adam Curry, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Oh, Jerm, this was a lot of fun. And I forget the name of our No Agenda producer who set this up. I think that's how it came together. I love that. I love that someone says, hey, I listened to this guy's podcast, listen to you. My dream is if you could do a podcast together. I'm like, okay, easy dream. So I'm glad we were able to set it up.